With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Search Special.
Hey, The Search Special. I'm Seth Bain, here with Brandon Scott. And Brandon, you were trying to get your mind right this afternoon. You're getting your braids twisted. How long does that take?
And you had it right earlier. And
oh, you're getting your locks twisted. You're getting your locks twisted.
Yeah, don't Bill O'Brien and go backwards. Yeah.
Dang it. Can I just claim to love Rick Ross? Does that get me back in?
Yeah. I love me some Rick Ross. I forget about that from Mark.
How long does it take to get your locks twisted?
So I was actually worried that I was going to be, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be cutting it close because my hair is so long, Seth, It doesn't take very long to twist them. It might just be like maybe an hour. But because my hair is so long, you know, I have to sit under the dryer for an extended amount of time.
Oh,
so,
really?
So I actually spend more time because, you know, it's getting washed and she puts a little something in it. So I'm spending more time getting my hair dried than I am getting it twisted because it's so long. So which means I should probably cut it a little bit. It takes about 3 hours.
So, okay, so you're doing a three-hour ordeal, and you're trying to think about, okay, different ways to feel good about the Texans right now and get into this coaching search. I'd love to – we're doing specials about coaching searches, but drama keeps popping up.
Right.
So Cal McNair delivered a statement earlier today. Deshaun Watson put out yet another cryptic tweet saying that I was at a 2, now I'm at a 10. A future lyric, but probably also it's also a reference to Adam Schefter saying that Deshaun had been at a – anger level 2 after the DeAndre Hopkins trade, and he was at a 10 now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Deshaun is still angry or if he's just messing with us, but the statement itself from Cal McNair, is it fair to say that it was not really well received by most Texans fans or at least listeners to Sports Radio 610?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, we got a lot of, you know, odd emojis and, you know, things like that. It came off kind of similar to the press conference from a week before. Tone, you know, the theme of it is like tone deaf. You know, I think everybody thinks Cal means well. In some ways, it's funny because I don't think anybody thinks Cal is like one of these bad owners or ill-willed owners or anything like that. But they're just like, what are you doing, Cal? Come on, man. What do you mean? Like, my thing is, why say, and this is me, you know, not as media member, but as, you know, Texan fan and person who understands messaging and media, I'm thinking, why say this thing, Cal?
Yeah.
Why
well,
say
it came
the thing?
Off, it really, more than anything, it felt like a statement that was just a defense of Jack Easterby.
Yes.
And because there's been so much talk, because there's a hashtag fire Easterby, because people just are so incensed by all this drama that Jack Easterby seems to be at the center of, including Andre Johnson calling him out and saying that all this bad stuff has happened since Jack Easterby has hired, all these bad personnel decisions that he was a part of with Bill O'Brien, which I know they'll keep trying to tell you that he wasn't any part of that. The team website says that Jack Easterby helped reshape the roster last year. So it was convenient that Jack Easterby was getting credit the year they won the division championship, but after Bill O'Brien got fired, all of a sudden Jack Easterby doesn't have anything to do with it. So people are upset at Jack Easterby. And this statement really came out. Well, I'll read it. The scrutiny on Jack is really unjustified. It's not a statement, but this is what he told John McClain. Jack was put into that role the organization needed by me. If missteps were made during the process, we'll own those within our building. Jack will return to the role he was brought here for and what he grew into after he got here. So the problem is that, and you talk about maybe being tone deaf or not necessarily listening to the fans or the criticism or the players themselves. It's not, people weren't mad about the job he did as interim GM. Like nobody is saying, I can't believe you couldn't trade Will Fuller.
Right.
What the hell is going on? It was everything that led up to the point where Bill O'Brien was fired. People associate, I do personally, I associate Jack Easterby with all of that, and it feels like he's getting off scot-free. And as you pointed out, not only is he getting off and getting no blame for any of the stuff that happened before, he's actually being looked at now as, oh, wow, this is a guy that can help us get back on track.
Yeah, because that is supposed to be the thing that he does well. I know there's been a lot of talk, and even you hit on this, Seth, is we collectively want this answer to what is the thing that Jack Easterby does well. And I know we've hit on John McClain about this, and this is a big talking point. What does he do well? What is his thing? What is the niche? What's the appeal? Why is he here? Well, I'm here to tell you, this is actually supposed to be the thing that he does well. And I'm not telling you that he does it well or not. I'm just saying that what he's been billed as, and if you do all of the research and the reading on him from like how he helped Kansas City, how he helped the Chiefs with the Javon Belcher situation and his role with the Patriots, you know, with Aaron Hernandez and everything that was going on over there. And when you hear Nick Caserio talking about him, not specifying, but helping him through personal stuff or them going through something personally or whatever it was that Nick Caserio was getting at that. His appeal and his thing is supposed to be dealing with conflict and helping you get out of it. Now, yep. Never mind whether he was the one who helped you get there. So it's to me, Seth, it's really interesting, and I just don't think that it's fair, and I've come to accept that Jack Easterby is going to be around, but I don't think that it's fair that he gets to be the guy who negotiated Deshaun Watson's contract, okay? And I said this earlier, but here's what I want to point out. You don't get to be the guy who negotiates Deshaun Watson's contract if you don't have responsibilities, if you don't have influence, if you're not already doing things that matter.
Yeah.
So, and we know for a fact that he negotiated the contract because they told us. And then that's one of the few times that he's spoken publicly was to celebrate that moment with Deshaun Watson and the team and the media. So we know that that happened. We know he was given that kind of power. So if you're letting him negotiate Deshaun Watson's contract, he's got to also be in the room and in the positions of all these other places that we have objections to. So it comes back to accountability. And what was the part of the quote that you read, Seth, about we'll own it in the building? What did it say? We'll own it in the building?
Let's see.
Right?
Oh, it was –
But you get what I'm saying, right? There's something in there about owning it in the building. And, well, okay, but how is that owning it in the building? It sounds like owning it in the building is, well, we got rid of Bill O'Brien. You know, well – That's not it. That doesn't seem like it's completely owning it in the building. I think that's the objection.
And that's where I was. Immediately after they fired Bill O'Brien. I didn't understand why Jack Easterby wasn't being fired. I just didn't, because it was he had been alongside Bill O'Brien that entire time. They were Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Players said, if you go in there to meet with Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby was there. Jack Easterby is addressing the team, talking to him on Saturday nights at the team hotel before meetings. You know, Jack Easterby was a part of contract negotiations. This was all before he became the interim GM. So when Cal says that Easterby will remain in the role that he was hired for and what he grew into, I know it's not going to be contract negotiations or personnel decisions, but it's going to be a whole lot of the other stuff that a lot of players just weren't comfortable with him being around. And in forging personal relationships with people in New England is great, but there are a lot of people that just flat out, if they don't trust him now, I don't understand how they're going to trust him 6 months from now. So
yeah.
He'll just be a kind of a mysterious guy that bounces around and works with the strength coaches and the nutritionists, apparently. And the players are, look, a lot of NFL teams are dysfunctional workplaces. There's a whole lot of distrust, and there's always people, you know, you don't quite know what they do or what have you. But those people don't always become such objects of scorn, and they don't become somebody that one of the all-time great players in Andre Johnson is tweeting about and calling him a divisive force.
Yeah, and I think trust is the biggest thing, or probably the biggest issue. Like, it's a buzzword, I know, but for me, it's the biggest issue with Jack Easterby, because I feel like trust is one of the things that he's supposed to be building. Like, he's not the football guy. So without trust, I'm not really sure what the basis is of, you know, the character development and all of those, like, intangible things that he's supposed to provide value to. So without that, that's a real issue for me. I don't know if we're up against the break or not.
No, go ahead.
So I wanted to say one thing real quick about Jack Easterby and just to speak to this accountability. And I'm going to be real careful here with, like, the journalistic practices of what went down here. But I want people to understand this, why it's really hard to believe that Jack Easterby is just some innocent bystander. And it speaks to what you're saying about, you know, what you're hearing from players. Like, everywhere you go, Jack Easterby's right there. Well, over the summer, okay, before training camp and after the draft, sometime between there, so since the pandemic, we had a meeting, and I feel like this part was public. There was a meeting with media members, maybe about 12 to 15 of us, with Jack Easterby and with Bill O'Brien, okay? Now, I'm not going to tell you everything that was said in there because it was off the record, right? So we're not going to divulge the details of it, but here's just the theme that I wanted to get you to understand. We were supposed to be having that meeting with Bill O'Brien, was our understanding. Jack Easterby just happened to be there when we got there, okay, or showed up at some point. Jack Easterby was there. What I felt like at the time was sort of unexpected, okay? Uh-huh. And Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby in tandem defended and spoke of different topics and different things that we addressed. It was not just, hey, here's Bill O'Brien with Jack Easterby. No, it was Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. And some of the things that the fans care about a lot, like the DeAndre Hopkins trade and different personnel moves that were relevant and that were hot button and that struck emotional chords amongst the team. And again, we're not going to talk about what was said because it was off the record. But Jack Easterby was right there when it was time to defend it. So publicly and behind the scenes here.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just this whitewashing and acting like he had nothing to do with the disaster that this roster became is what just, it rubs people the wrong way. And it rubs, it's not just, look, players will be angry about stuff. Maybe they get over it. Some guys get shipped out. Some guys get shipped in. But there's just something that strikes at the core of, like, you know this guy at work, right? You know these guys, like the guys that just always never seem to be around when it's time to clean up the mess. They're always there when the boss is happy, like those kinds of guys. So it rubs people the wrong way. Look, there is a coaching search going on. One of the parts of that coaching search is that the Texans presumably are in competition for a few of these candidates, and there are fewer and fewer teams out there looking for candidates because some jobs have been filled. Let's look what we're up against with these other teams looking for head coaches coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Search Special.
All right, this is The Search. I'm here with Brandon Scott. I'm Seth Payne. And look, there is a search going on. It's not all of this is not the Jack Easterby offseason. I refuse to allow it to become. The optimist in me thinks that, all right, Cal understands there's an issue. I think Nick Caserio is probably figuring out there's an issue. They're going to figure out a role for Jack Easterby that's suited for what he can do and what he should be doing, and that over time things will kind of just fizzle out. That's the optimist in me. Who knows if that's the way it'll go. But the Texans were operating with a really, really weird structure for 18 months. They were operating with a head coach who was also the general manager, and his right-hand man was a decidedly non-football guy who had only been in the NFL for 6 years and who had really only been doing the kind of stuff the Texans were asking him to do pretty much as – the amount of experience he had was, like, the first time he did it for the Texans, that was his experience. So, like, the first time he stepped in to negotiate a contract in his life was when he was doing huge contracts for the Texans. So, as much as I'm riled up about some of the things that I've heard about Jack Easterby, if he can just kind of recede into the shadows and work where he should be, then maybe some sense of normality will return, and we can just hire a football coach.
Yeah, that's the hope. I think that really the biggest thing right now is the football coach, but I take this from Landry in the middays, Landry Locker from In the Loop, and he had this early when they hired Caserio. His point was no one you would hope, no, there's no GM candidate that the Texans could have hired, and this is now, I guess, accepting that Jack Easterby is going to be around, but there's no GM candidate that they could have hired that knows and understands what Jack Easterby is better than Nick Caserio, what his role should be, where he should be within the organization, and that sort of thing. So there is the positive of this idea that if anyone knows how to properly utilize Nick Caserio, and if there's anybody that could reel Jack Easterby in, or to have a candid conversation with Jack Easterby, having such a personal relationship with him, it would be Caserio. So yeah, there's the positive. And I've said this. I said this earlier. But I think that the head coach hire is going to go a long way in smoothing things over with Deshaun Watson. And I think, at least hopefully.
It is, because we've reached this dysfunctional state where, because there was a vacuum, because O'Brien was in a role that he shouldn't have been in, because right, Jack Easterby was in a role that he shouldn't have been in, because you didn't have an actual GM, and in a lot of respects, because of that, you didn't have a coach for 12 weeks of the season after Bill O'Brien was fired. I mean, Romeo Crennel did a great job as an interim, but that's not the same as a genuine leader, right?
Yeah.
So I think when that happens, dysfunctional things get way out of whack and become exaggerated, and situations are exacerbated, and it's just a miserable state. If you can get back to like just a conventional structure, that's all I want is a conventional structure with a general manager and a head coach. One of our texters is insisting that we're making more out of this than it should be. This is the big thing I would tell you. This is where you need to understand the reality of the situation. Whether you want to believe that Jack Easterby was a harmful presence or not, perception. Perception is reality in a lot of respects. And a longtime personnel person told my co-host Sean Pendergast that all the candidates for general manager that he knew were going to insist on firing Jack Easterby if they took the job. That it was as simple as that. That they didn't want that. They'd heard enough, and that was it. So you're limiting your pool of candidates that are going to take the job as soon as it becomes a condition, apparently, that you don't want to get Jack Easterby fired. So with the head coaches, now you have to start wondering, all right, of the head coaches, are they going to start to have concerns? Joe Brady wants to have a chance to talk to Deshaun Watson at the very least before he interviews. That's an odd request. That's not a normal request. I think it makes sense, and it should be like more coaches should do that if you're an offensive coordinator and you're going to come in and work with a quarterback. But the perception of what's going on within the Texans organization, whether they want to believe it or not, is affecting the coach search. It did affect the GM search, and it's something they got to fix and get right sooner rather than later, hopefully.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, Seth, because this is one thing that I just realized at some point in this afternoon, I guess when I was getting my locks twisted. But the Texans were the first team to have the openings, and they're nowhere near the first team to fill them. Does that say anything? Does that speak to you at all? Like, does that say anything to you?
It made me – look, I could go into all kinds of conspiracy theories about what it made me wonder about whether Caserio was already their guy or not. But it's – they wasted an opportunity, right, to get out ahead of all of this, to make the request. And I know that – another thing that was said today, too, that didn't quite make sense in the statement was that, you know, they were waiting on Caserio to give them his list before they requested interviews from certain people. But they had requested interviews from people already. Why did you wait so long for Eric Bieniemy? And honestly, I'd love to hear the explanation. And I understand why teams don't talk about stuff like this, but it's very curious to me that they didn't interview Robert Saleh. I know Robert Saleh a little bit just because he was a quality control coach when I was playing for the Texans. His players absolutely love him. He is a very good defensive coordinator. Even this year, where half the 49ers' best defensive players were banged up, injured, and on injured reserve, he still had a credible defense.
Yeah, that was for me, Seth. That was the thing that I was, earlier when I was saying making the most out of the least or doing – like, Salah was the guy for me out of all of them, like, especially if you look at Salah versus Bienemy, right? For me, Salah, the thing – the big thing was he's the one that did the most with the least, the one that I felt like you could give lemons and he's most likely to get you lemonade, you know?
To
me, now I feel like that could be – I don't know if that's Joe Brady or if that's Brandon Staley. I know he's got Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but when you look at what he's doing with some of the guys that whose names you don't necessarily know or didn't know before this year, it's pretty impressive. So that to me was another thing. Like, you're looking at the Texans, this is a team that's going to really struggle to supplement the roster or to build the roster. I mean, we've been pretty frank. I think Nick Caserio was pretty open with you guys, with you and Sean, when he did that interview the day he was introduced, when he talked to you guys one-on-one, when you asked him about the defense. He was pretty honest about how bad things are or how much is needed in terms of getting real playmakers and difference makers on that side of the ball.
He was diplomatic about it, but he said, you know, he agreed with me that they just need more playmakers.
It's not exactly.
It's not just he wasn't going to say, hey, no, we can be awesome this year with the guys that we have right now. No, they need to get better.
Yeah.
And when it comes to I worry that perhaps the Texans have a little bit of a disadvantage now because of whether it's real or not, the perceived dysfunction around the league.
Yes.
Because now you are down to, apparently Detroit is very close to hiring Dan Campbell, or at the very least, he's the favorite. We'll see. The four teams that haven't officially committed to somebody would be the Lions, the Texans, the Chargers, and who am I missing?
Lions, Texans, Chargers. Let's see. Atlanta just hired. The Jets just hired. Who are we?
Oh, the Eagles. The Eagles, of course.
Yeah, because Eagles. That was kind of the wild card because they fired Doug Peterson. Yeah.
I still now that you're down to these four, there are some natural advantages that some of the other teams did. You know, I think the Jaguars, as much as people want to bag on the Jaguars and talk about how they got to play two games a year in London and all these other things, they've got the number one overall pick and they've got a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
And they've got an owner that's willing to spend money. They've got a ton of cap space right now, but it's not because they're necessarily cheap. So I think the Jaguars were a genuine contender with the Texans. But the Texans have a quarterback. The Chargers have a very good young quarterback who's on his rookie contract.
Yes.
So that right there, I think the defense. They have a defense and pass rush and all that. The one thing you have to remember with the Chargers, though, like the Texans are now the object of scrutiny a lot and talk of dysfunction and whatnot. The Chargers are one of the original, wow, these guys are whacked. Like whacked out of their head. Not whack, but like whacked out of their head. There's not a lot of really goodwill towards the Chargers and the organization and the way they operate. So I don't know. I look at the one thing about Cal McNair and what he's done as an owner in the last year. Even though the narrative used to be, though, that the McNairs don't want to spend money, they don't care about winning, Cal McNair spent more cash this year than any other team in the league. And I think that he is aggressive. He is willing to spend money. Did they spend money errantly? Yes. But the willingness is there. And I think between Nick Caserio and a new head coach, Caserio might be able to talk that head coach into saying, hey, these guys are going to be aggressive. I think the Eagles in their cap situation, in the lack of a defined quarterback situation, actually puts them below the Texans right now, despite all the other drama circling around. The Eagles have a whole thing going on with Howie Roseman that's, you could call it dysfunctional, you could call it whatever it is, but there's something there. I would say that right now my power ranking would be Chargers most desirable, Texans, then Lions, then Eagles. No, Eagles then Lions.
Yeah, I was going to say
Eagles and Lions. Yeah,
yeah. I was just going to reverse those two. That was going to be mine. But the to me the Lions, that's always going to be the one that's tough. You know, it's one of the reasons why I like Jim Caldwell so much, because of how bad that job is. Not how bad of a job he did, but how bad of a job that was that he had to do, which is coach the Lions.
Yeah, so. you got to give him credit for whatever it is. I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to do look, I do have to figure out a way to get myself feeling a whole lot better going into this weekend. And I think the Friday news dump is over. I think we're on the right track. And I do I got to figure out, like, when I'm going to hit the panic button if the Texans don't have a coach. We'll talk about that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Search Special.
It is The Search Special. I'm Seth Payne. I'm here with Brandon Scott. Look, I don't want to say time is running out, but as all these candidates just start getting snapped up by other teams, I think there's a good chance that maybe the Texans candidate that they most want is either still coaching, or it could either be still coaching, or it could be somebody that perhaps hasn't garnered a whole lot of interest from somebody else. Now, that doesn't make you feel like you're necessarily getting the hot commodity. But sometimes, like Frank Reich 2 years ago was not a hot commodity and ended up getting the job just because the Colts had Jeff McDaniels bail out on him at the last moment. And Frank Reich was one of the last guys hanging around. So yeah. Frank Reich got the job, and that was probably, like, in my opinion, that was probably the better choice.
Yeah. He was nowhere even near the top, like, three or four or five for them, right? They had a couple of others that they wanted ahead of him,
too. I want to say Ursay said it was, like, their ninth candidate or something like that. And it was ugly. Josh McDaniels started hiring a staff, even though he couldn't. This is what happened for those of you that don't remember, didn't hear the story the first time. Josh McDaniels had agreed to become the coach for the Colts, but the Patriots were still in the playoffs. So he wasn't allowed to officially take the job, but he started filling out a staff. Guys committed to, you know, leaving their current jobs to go work for the Colts. And then Josh McDaniels got back. He was going into Foxborough to clean up his office. Bill Belichick grabbed him by the elbow and said, "Hey, come on in. I want to talk to you." And reportedly just told Josh McDaniels, I'll give you the keys to the vault. I'll tell you exactly how we go about team building. I'll just clue you in and you'll know all this stuff that you never knew before." And that's how they got Josh McDaniels back. Yeah. So meanwhile, the Colts are looking around and they're left, you know, holding a bag of money that they were about to pay a coach. And so they ended up hiring Frank Reich. One of the guys that had agreed to come to work for the Colts was Matt Eberflus, who was briefly a candidate the Texans were interested in, but the defensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts. Eberflus might be one of those guys we were just talking about that just said he declined to be interviewed by the Texans.
Yeah.
So Eberflus could have been one of these guys that said, "You know what? I'm going to wait until I get the right situation, and whatever that is, not the right situation for me."
Yeah, that bothered me the most, though, or not bothered me, but concerned me, I should say, because it's not like Eberflus was one of the top two or three guys. Like, it's not like his name was kind of out there the way Bienemy's was and the way Salas was. And so I didn't feel like Eberflus was in a position to be as selective as maybe some of the other ones. So that to me was even more concerning because of that reason.
Yeah, when I hit the panic button, it'll be if everybody else has hired a coach and if there's nobody left out there that I would just absolutely feel okay with. Like, I'm not incredibly picky with the coaching search because it's such a crapshoot that more than anything, I'm just looking for red flags of, wait a second, I don't get it with this guy. I don't see it with that guy. You know, like David Culley, who is the Ravens wide receiver coach that the Texans interviewed. There was never any buzz about him before. He's been in the league a long time. I would be nervous if they hired him. I would hope that I was wrong, but I would be nervous. But the candidates that are still out there right now, for one, some of them are still coaching. Eric Bieniemy, still coaching. They have the interview requested. Some other teams have already interviewed Eric Bieniemy, but the Texans are going to have to wait because of the timing and the rules until afterwards. Brian Daboll, who's still coaching with the Bills. He's the offensive coordinator for the Bills. If they hired Brian Daboll, I'd be a little bit nervous because he comes out of New England twice. He's been in New England twice, but he's also been through the ringer. He's been elsewhere. I know that we were on here with Wade last week, and Wade has misgivings about Brian Daboll and doesn't necessarily see a big difference between him and Tim Kelly. Are you when you gave yourself your pep talk this afternoon, did you give yourself a pep talk about Brian Daboll?
You know what? I didn't give myself a pep talk about Brian Daboll because, curiously, he hasn't really been in the mix. And, I've talked about this with others in the media. Cody Stoops, one of them, who was filling in earlier in the week, trying to figure out why. Because the connection seemed very obvious with the New England background and Belichick and everything. But it seems pretty clear, or at least it did earlier in the week. I don't know where we are now, but it seemed like Brian Daboll to the Chargers was all but certain. You know, I want to say he might have gone to high school with the GM over there. You know, it seemed like that was going to happen, the Brian Daboll to Chargers thing. So I had talked myself out of him being here.
You started doing like, I didn't want her anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
She's ugly anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. even though I probably would have been, you know, but you know what? I have not been. Brian Daboll hasn't been one of the names that I've just been enamored with. Even though I do like what the Bills are doing, but he hasn't been one of the ones that I just felt like I had to have.
I like what the Bills are doing, but we talked about this last Friday night. And then I watched the Bills play, and I've watched the Bills play a few times this year, and I've been impressed with what they've been doing. Even though they went through a lull there in the middle of the season where all of a sudden everybody said, well, look, nope, Josh Allen sucks again, and Brian Daboll's not actually all that good. The thing about that stretch was I remember I went back and looked through the schedule. It was like four games in a row where it was just miserable weather. It was outdoors. It was awful weather. The other quarterback had a horrible game too. So, okay, Josh Allen isn't some Superman that can play awesome and pass the ball awesome in bad weather. But the thing about the game this last weekend was I'm watching and I'm seeing Josh Allen run and run and run and run. And I'm watching him take a bunch of hits, but he's 6'5", 245 pounds. It looks like nothing hurts him when he gets hit because he's so big and because he just absorbs the blow. But I don't know how much of that offense is Brian Daboll versus the defense has to account for the fact that Josh Allen will run the ball a lot. Like, he ran over 100 times this year. So, like, how do you account for that? How do you account for how much of it's Brian Daboll? And I also don't want to see Deshaun Watson run that much. I'd like to see him run a little bit more just to keep defenses safe or honest, but I don't want him running that much. Now, I know you like Leslie Frazier. Tell me what you were telling yourself about Leslie Frazier.
Yeah, so for me...
So Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator for the Bills.
Yeah, Leslie Frazier, defensive coordinator for the Bills. A couple of things that I was trying to convince myself. Either... Is Leslie Frazier actually a candidate for head coach, or is there a scenario where he could come over and be a part of a staff with an Eric Bieniemy? Now, you and I were talking about that during the break. I don't know what his contract situation is, if he'd be able to do that for a lateral move or anything like that. So I was talking to myself into Leslie Frazier in a couple of different contexts, but I do think that he's kind of a badass and the type of person that can come in with a personality that could be the perfect buffer to some of the ethos that's in there now. I don't know how if he's consistent with what they're trying to do or if he's the perfect buffer to it. But I was talking myself into that, you know, just because of that. I think his personality would be a good one to have in the building.
I would have to go back and look at his last year in Minnesota when he was a head coach because he's a defensive guy. And, again, remember the danger of thinking that if you hire a defensive guy, you're going to have an awesome defense. They did have a good defense in their second year, or a good team in his second year. But then in his third and final year in Minnesota, they finished, I believe it was 31st in yards and 32nd in points allowed on defense. So I'm guessing there were at least some injuries that that accounted for that. I liked when I watched the Bills line up and play defense. I think they look like a really disciplined bunch.
Right.
Ed Oliver, for the Cougs out there, Ed Oliver. He's had a very up and down first couple of years in Buffalo, but as of late, he's really started to come on. And I think that Ed Oliver will end up being a pretty good pro. It's just taken a little while. It's hard to learn to play in the NFL, especially when you're Ed Oliver's. He's fast as hell, but he's a little bit shorter, so you really got to get your technique nailed down.
Yeah. I was gonna say just with the Bills defense, I love the way that they fly to the ball. I am actually more impressed. Funny enough, I'm more impressed with the Bills' defense than I am. Like, as far as coaching, I'm more impressed with the defense than I am the offense. I think that the offense just has a quarterback that's kind of figured it out, and obviously they added one of the better receivers in the league. I am impressed with how Daboll and that offense seems to have figured out how to do it without a real running game outside of what Josh Allen gives you, being Josh Allen.
Yeah.
That part is impressive because, hey, I mean, it's – It's the Texans, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, the Texans, that they could use somebody that knows how to make the most out of not having an effective run game and still have an offense that can score touchdowns. But oddly enough, I've been more impressed with the Bills defensively from a coaching perspective than I was necessarily offensively.
One of our listeners asked, do you think the head coach search before Nick Caserio was hired was just practice interviews? I think that's a very valid question. And I wouldn't even be upset if they were somehow, I guess, because the Texans were in that strange place where they'd been without a head coach and GM for 13 weeks, and yet a lot of the candidates they couldn't interview until after the season was over. So I think they did some interviews either that they could, like if I would look at Marvin Lewis at the time, I was thinking, okay, I think this might just be an interview to maybe pick Marvin Lewis's brain a little bit, an interview to maybe you're surprised. I would like, personally, Marvin Lewis had to operate under some really tough circumstances. Like, and I'm not asking you to cry a river for him or anything, but with the Bengals' whole MO, their whole strategy is to spend as little money as possible by taking out a whole bunch of guys who are deemed character risks elsewhere. You know, and not all of them, you know, like DJ Reader's a hell of a guy, but they'll always have a few guys that maybe other teams don't want them, like Adam Jones, you know, and then they'll go there. And Marvin Lewis does an incredible job or did an incredible job. There were so many times that whether it was Adam Jones or various other players.
Vontaze Burfict,
and he continued to have some problems. But but there's something, it's almost becomes like this boys town, you know, like where they – I think Marvin Lewis just had a way with these guys where he treated them a certain way and maybe in a lot of ways just had good conversations with them. But a lot of guys he got the absolute most of where other places just didn't want him around. So
I just wanted to say Marvin Lewis fits along those lines of doing the most with the least, that criteria I was talking about earlier in the show. He would fit somewhere along in there, winning or having some success in spite of his circumstances and surroundings.
And I guess the only thing I could have said about him is they kept hiring him. They kept re-upping his contract. I don't think it was the ideal situation, but was he – I'm trying to think of coaches who have stepped down from their position when it wasn't a retirement situation. Bobby Petrino did it in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. In college in the NFL. Steve Spurrier did it in college. Yeah, Bobby Petrino was with the Falcons and just up in RUNNOFT in the middle of the season. It was one of the weirdest things. He pulled like what the Colts franchise did when they left Baltimore. He just did it as an individual. He just left and drove his motorcycle back to wherever. Oh, wait, was that before or after the motorcycle? That was before the motorcycle.
That was before his motorcycle. When he got caught with the young lady on the motorcycle.
Having an affair with the asphalt is what he did. No, because it was even worse than having an affair, because it was an affair with somebody in the athletic department who was making more money than she probably should have, if I recall it correctly. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but there was even more to it than him just having an affair. There were inner office politics and perhaps budgetary concerns and everything.
Yeah, I thought he basically gave his mistress a job or something like that.
Either that or it was like she was qualified for the job, but the job was paying way more than it typically would. It was dicey on a lot of different levels. Bobby Petrino, though, Bobby Petrino's scheme is a really good. Like, he runs an NFL style scheme in college. He's a hell of a football coach.
Yeah.
He just can't drive a motorcycle. he's probably on a Goldwing or something, you know. And I think people look at those Goldwings and they think, oh, they're nice and big and smooth and comfortable. They're probably easy.
You know
Most
what he is?
They're heavy.
You know what he can do though, or what he is committed to? Lying.
He's good at that.
Because when he was on that motorcycle, man, he was still not going to tell you the truth. Red nose, red face, neck brace, and all. I'm not telling you nothing.
So to get back to the question,
yeah.
Do I think they were just practice interviews? The only one that I'm curious about is that they interviewed Joe Brady on January 5th. So let's see. Today is the 15th. Okay, that was before they hired Casario. That was the one that was a little curious to me, because some of the other guys that they had interviewed already, like Jim Caldwell, like Marvin Lewis, they were out there. They didn't have jobs currently. I think in a lot of ways people figured, okay, these guys might be retiring. So maybe those are practice interviews. But the Joe Brady one was interesting, because I would have felt that they would want to wait until they got their GM to conduct that interview, because Joe Brady is like a young and upcoming and a hot name. So maybe a little bit of that. I don't want to hint at anything that might seem like tampering or anything. On January 5th, it wouldn't have been tampering if the Texans had been talking to Nick Casario. So who knows? Maybe at that point Cal knew that he was leaning that way, or one of the other general managers was. So they said, hey, we'll just do the interview. You can record it, and then we'll do another interview after that.
Yes. Yeah,
so I don't want to throw like conspiracy theories at every damn thing that comes up with this team.
Yeah. So this is what I want to ask you, especially having been in the league, Seth. Like, I understand how important the alignment is with the GM and the head coach and ownership, and, you know, just kind of being in the same place philosophically and all of that. But isn't there something to having universally good candidates for the job that maybe you should interview no matter who your GM is, no matter whether you have a GM or who the GM is? Like I could see it being a thing, like, okay, I don't know if this guy is a good fit. But as far as, like, an interview, like, mm-hmm. and that's not a hire, right? We're talking about just an interview. It seems like some guys are worth an interview no matter who your general manager is, right? Is that
right.
fair to say? And maybe Jim Caldwell would be one of those people?
I think it's fair, and I'm going to be honest with you, because of the COVID restrictions, I don't want to misspeak and mess up like what the rules are, but I think one concern would be, okay, if we get the one Zoom interview with him, are we not going to be able to get another Zoom interview until afterwards? Like, I wonder if they were maybe trying to time it up right so that when they got their GM, they'd still have time for him to conduct that first interview. For the guys that are still playing, now, let's see. Joe Brady, it wouldn't have mattered because they're not well at the time. Yeah. Okay. No, that was after.
But let me point out something, though. I'm literally occurred to me as I'm looking at you on Zoom, Seth. Mm-hmm. The Zoom interviews you can record.
Right.
I don't know how it normally works if like back in the day, or, you know, before COVID, if folks were video recording the interviews that they were doing with candidates. I don't feel like that was probably a thing, more than like, maybe it was, but I feel like it's much easier to do now to actually record your Zoom interview. And maybe that's just something that you can share with your GM candidate once you get them.
Right. And I guess it's hard to anticipate what the GM's going to be asking him. You know, it's going to be hard to, but it's a conversation. I don't know. The longer this goes on, and the fact that Casario is here, I feel like there's a professional in the building. And I, like, that part of it, despite all of the other dysfunction, despite everything else that's going on, for 18 months, I didn't feel like there was a professional in the building. But now we have Nick Casario here. There's going to be a head coach who's a professional, and they're not going to botch this. I have to twist. I'm crossing my fingers and praying that they don't. Brandon, awesome having you on here. Really enjoyed this with you. You've done an incredible job with our website, and it's on. On to the next thing. Antibodies to you, Brandon.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news,
you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.